Earlier this year in January and February, Professor Mark Dodson presented a brilliant science show series on innovation. He's from the Business School of the University of Queensland. The secret of success, he concluded, is, in a word, collaboration. And a prime example of it happened at Bletchley. Mark.
Last year, a friend asked me to join him on a visit to Bletchley Park, a gloomy mansion in foggy, featureless central England. I was vaguely aware of the significance of Bletchley to the conduct of the Second World War through the film Enigma with the lovely Kate Winslet, and as of the wartime home of the genius Alan Turing. What I wasn't aware of, and what piqued my interest, was just how much Bletchley Park can teach us today about innovative organisations. It tells us about the importance of diversity in people's skills, of combining flexibility and discipline, and the value of unifying objectives. Bletchley Park was home throughout the war to Britain's main wartime decryption establishment, decoding enemy messages. Of its contribution, General Eisenhower wrote, "The intelligence from you has been of priceless value. It has saved thousands of British and American lives, and in no small way contributed to the speed with which the enemy was routed and eventually forced to surrender." Reflecting its importance and incredible ability to remain secretive, Winston Churchill described Bletchley Park as the golden goose that never once cackled. At its peak, Bletchley employed 10,000. It confronted massively complex technical problems and mastered them through inspired management of talent and brainpower in trying bureaucratic circumstances. It developed and used technology that included the world's first electronic computer, the Colossus. Bletchley first demonstrated its abilities in 1941, when Britain was losing the war. German U-boats were devastating supply lines across the Atlantic, their torpedoes sinking hundreds of ships, killing tens of thousands of Allied seamen. Locating the position of U-boats was a crucial national priority. To do this, it was essential to break the encrypted messages sent between the submarines and their headquarters, sent by a machine known as Enigma. The Germans, no doubt reassured by the fact that there were 15 to the power of 22 possibilities for each letter encoded, and a new sequence of codes began at midnight every day, believed these encrypted codes were impregnable. The history of early attempts to crack the Enigma included a significant success when a drunk German officer sent out messages to all his operators wishing them a Merry Christmas. The offer of money and sex tempted a German cipher clerk in Paris to provide the French Secret Service with details of the Enigma system. The clerk was later shot. The details he provided were forwarded to the British and Polish, and three Polish mathematicians made the greatest progress in using the information to begin to crack the codes. Enigma's coded messages were eventually mechanically converted by Bletchley directly into plain language, and once the daily code was broken, the whole German communication system became readable to the British. From July 1941, broken Enigma-coded messages to and from German U-boats led to a two-thirds decrease in losses compared to previous months. By 1942, two Enigma messages were being decoded every minute. And by the end of the war, it was unusual for German codes not to be broken before breakfast. Bletchley cracked German, Italian, Russian, and eventually Japanese codes. Messages sent directly from Hitler were decoded. Intelligence from Bletchley informed battles from North Africa to the Russian front and was crucial to Eisenhower's plans for D-Day. The story of Bletchley Park is that of the most exceptional people. It is a story of scientific geniuses, but it is also one of brilliant engineers, highly competent intelligence analysts, and diligent and devoted machine operators. It is a story of Alan Turing, whom President Barack Obama, in a speech to the British House of Commons, put alongside Newton and Darwin for his contribution to science. It is a story of human frailty, sacrifice, and heroism, including spectacularly that of a tragic 16-year-old boy. It tells of the exceptional organizational skills of peacetime business managers. Bletchley succeeded because of the contribution of outstanding engineers from the General Post Office, using their technical expertise at the very forefront of technological knowledge. Hundreds of hard-working young women made things work. The key to Bletchley's success lay in the integration of work of all the people rather than in individual brilliance. The professional diversity there was striking. They were national chess champions, managers from Unilever and John Lewis department store, and academics with backgrounds in Egyptology, classics, history and modern languages. The roll call of people who worked there included Roy Jenkins, one of Britain's greatest politicians, and Ian Fleming, the creator of James Bond. Hundreds of wrens, young women in the Royal Naval Service, were employed, needing some mathematics and good social recommendations. What was appreciated of them was cheerful common sense. The work the wrens did required extended periods of intense concentration, often in noisy and smelly conditions, and frequently demanded considerable manual dexterity. The geniuses that worked at Bletchley were known for their eccentricity. Max Newman was a brilliant scientist who, after the war, led the development of British computing. A wren described seeing Newman standing on Bletchley Park railway station in a shabby coat, holding a rabbit in one hand and looking distressed. She asked if he was all right, and he replied he had lost his ticket. She told him not to worry and just to explain to the train guard what had happened. He exclaimed his problem was that without his ticket, he could not remember whether he was travelling to Oxford or Cambridge. Turing is reputed to have chained his tea mug to a heating radiator and to have turned up for a game of tennis wearing nothing but an overcoat. To avoid hay fever, he used to cycle to work in a gas mask. Practical men, engineers, complemented these unworldly scientists. Colossus drew on the best talent at Bletchley and from the mathematical world outside, but relied on a number of key post office engineers. Tommy Flowers was a crucial contributor, whose role went unacknowledged and unrecognised for decades. It was Flowers who realised the potential of using valves as high-speed switches for digital computing, and who essentially brought electronics into the design of Colossus. Colossus was his idea. Flowers reveals a great deal about the uncertainties, vagaries, and luck involved in innovation. He was on a work visit to Germany at the outbreak of war, and a warning phone call led him to leave only hours before the borders were closed. Without him, Colossus would not have been built. Flowers' career floundered after the war. Secrecy prevented any notice of his achievements, and his suggestion that electronics would play an important role in telecommunications was received with incredulity. Flowers ended the war in debt. Had he patented his work, he would have become extremely wealthy. Numerous people contributed importantly from outside of Bletchley. To break Enigma, it was critical to gain access to U-boat codebooks. When a British destroyer off the coast of Egypt sank U-559, three British sailors jumped into the sinking submarine to rescue its codebooks. Two drowned. But the youngest, 16-year-old Tommy Brown, a canteen assistant, successfully retrieved them. Along with the two deceased, Brown was awarded the George Medal, its youngest ever recipient. He was discharged from the Navy when it was found he was underage and died 2 years later, rescuing his sister from a fire. The organisation of Bletchley Park combined on the one hand a high level of openness and freedom and on the other exceptionally strong discipline and rigidity. This is what the contemporary academic management literature, in its usual unimaginative way, calls ambidexterity. The important point was the organisation emphasised team working and open knowledge sharing where it was needed, and demarcation and specialisation where it was most appropriate. The historian Asa Briggs, later Baron Briggs and Chancellor of the Open University, an analyst at Bletchley, says it was a flexible institution capable of adaptation and development which lacked any formal diagram of its organisational structure until 1944. Its vagueness of structure and need for improvisation led to self-governing and self-disciplining that Hugh Trevor Roper, later Lord Dacre, who also worked at Bletchley, described as friendly informality verging on apparent anarchy. It was a strange mixture of military and civilian, with a complicated formal reporting structure into military intelligence and Whitehall's foreign and cabinet offices. Unusually in wartime, however, military rank counted for nothing, and junior ranks could oversee their seniors. Codebreaker Peter Hilton describes his group as intellectuals who couldn't give a damn, meaning it only accepted self-imposed discipline. The open management style was built in many ways on that of a Cambridge college, from where many cryptologists came. Hilton's section head, Max Newman, was said to have recruited the best and expected the best of them. Despite the urgency of the work, Newman would release two members of his team for two-week research sabbaticals to think about how to improve methods and procedures. A logbook was created where everyone could write down their ideas for improvement and which were discussed at a 4 p.m. tea party every few weeks. There was a vibrant social life. There were amateur dramatics, chess, tennis, visits to the pub when, circumventing wartime shortages, they actually had any beer, discussion on political, economic, educational and philosophical matters. And the analyst, who later founded Amnesty International, organised a series of seminars. There were also continuing problems resulting from military and bureaucratic disquiet over Bletchley's peculiarities and independence. At one stage, the efforts in Bletchley Park were being curtailed for lack of funds, and Turing and colleagues wrote to Churchill, emphasising the value of what they were doing and could do in future. Churchill's reaction was immediate, with a letter to his principal staff officer telling him to provide all funds and support requested, headed by the unquestionable order, "Action this day. Make sure they have all they want on extreme priority and report to me that this has been done." A key lesson of leadership is to know what is important and to understand how easily organisations can fail to recognise it. Everyone in Bletchley was acutely aware of the dangers of the Germans finding out their codes had been cracked, which remarkably they never did. The maintenance of total secrecy was paramount. Everyone at Bletchley signed the Official Secrets Act, and one scientist explained, "We're all very aware that leaks could lead to the loss of countless lives." While this provides a fundamentally uniting cause, there were substantial personal costs. One Wren told of her sadness that she was unable to tell her husband of 30 years before he died about what she did in the war. Many employees wished they had been able to tell their parents. One of the most important scientific contributors was challenged by his father about what was preventing him pursuing active service. He could not answer. Another codebreaker was informed by his ex-headmaster that he was a disgrace to his school. This commitment to secrecy shows the power of deeply shared values and objectives. But secrecy had a price greater than personal costs. British science and industry, for example, is argued to have suffered post-war as a result of the secrecy surrounding Colossus. British technology was years in advance of American computing at the time, but this advantage was lost when secrecy about the project was maintained after the war. In 1943, Churchill received valuable information from Bletchley about German troop movements in Russia. He chose to inform Stalin. Pre-warned, the Russian army was prepared, and the Battle of Kursk proved a turning point in the war on the Russian front. Ironically, Stalin already knew the information, having received it from a deeply embedded Russian spy in Bletchley. Wartime induces astonishingly heroic and selfless behaviours, but despite being so unusual, Bletchley Park holds lessons for any organisation facing the battle of doing new things. Here are a few. Innovation results not from the contributions of exceptional people, but from numerous and diverse people working together. These people can be unlikely and unexpected. People always respond to intellectually stimulating environments. Innovation flourishes when organisations move ideas from structures that are loose to those that are tight. And, as ever, culture is the key. Amazing things can be achieved when the values and objectives of an organisation and its people coincide.
Reminds me of the ABC Science Unit of old. Mark Dodson is Professor in the Business School at the University of Queensland. Next week, Alan Finkel, Chancellor of Monash, on electric cars. I'm Robin Williams.